Welcome to LabCorp Perspectives Oncology, where we connect on cancer, science, and patient care. I'm your host, Dr. Rebecca Previs, and I'm a Director of Medical Affairs here at LabCorp. Today, we're joined in speaking with Ken Schlosser, who was diagnosed with non-small cell lung cancer and whose journey highlights the power of precision oncology. Thanks to comprehensive genomic profiling and OmniSeq Insight at the time of his diagnosis, his care team was able to identify an actionable biomarker that's guided his treatment and his life ever since. Thank you so much, Ken, for joining us today. I'm so excited that we have the opportunity to speak again.
Yes, thank you for this opportunity. I greatly appreciated it.
Well, let's dive in. I want to review your whole patient journey because I found it to be so inspiring. First, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and, you know, what led up to your diagnosis?
Yeah, sure. Well, I was in the office working a little bit of overtime on a Saturday about 6 years ago, actually May of 2019, March 2019, I should say. And I had a little discomfort in my chest area, and I was, almost passed out. And it's something like I've never, ever experienced before. So I knew there probably wasn't quite something right, even though I've been in, really stellar health my whole life. So I was almost going to, skip by getting it checked out, figuring it was just some sort of little abnormality of some sort. But I figured I better just get it checked out. So I went to the local ER, and, I thought for sure it might be some heart ailment because I have quite a few generations of history on the male side with heart disease and early death as well. So even though I had, cardio checked out, quite a few years ago and keep up with my doctor visits and so forth, but I figured, all right, let's just get things checked out. So that's when they determined that I knew that I had silent gallstones leading up to this, but they never really caused any issues. So it turns out it was an abnormal gallbladder attack that caused that pain and discomfort in my chest area and sent me to the ER.
What was that ER visit like?
Yeah, it was actually, I hadn't been into an ER myself, or maybe been a little cut in my leg through the years. So that was, quite a interesting experience and memorable. And it was a very young doctor, too. That's the most memorable part about it. A very young doctor, probably in her 30s, So I'm probably one of the first patients that she ever had to, convey that I had somebody had lung cancer. But yeah, she was able to, and the technicians were able to determine that, no, my heart was in good shape and it was an abnormal gallbladder attack, but they did notice on a chest CT. Still pretty amazing how they could, pick up that. It was, 3.4 centimeters. And when she mentioned the way it was shaped and defined, she was quite sure that it was lung cancer. So she had to sit down and pull up a chair and, convey that to myself and my wife. And obviously it, was not anything I was ever expecting because I didn't have any history of, cancer, lung cancer, any sort of really cancer in my family. I did have an uncle who had colon cancer like 30-some years ago, but really no immediate issues with cancer and no real risk factors that I was aware of. So yeah, it was quite a traumatic Saturday afternoon there in the ER.
I can only imagine. And what was going through your mind at that point when you had the CT findings, this ER physician was telling you this news for the first time? Do you mind sharing that?
I really just felt compassion for the doctor because it's a very difficult diagnosis to have to convey. And obviously the shock, settling in to make sure I heard it correctly. My wife was there, so she heard it. And now in retrospect, I'm aware that anybody with lungs can get lung cancer, but at the time, you think of the stigma that goes along with it and other things with risk factors. So, it was quite an eye-opening experience.
Yeah. I'm so impressed by your strength and grace, both you and your wife. And then walk us through what happened next. It sounds like, if I remember correctly, then you had to have a biopsy and you were referred to your oncologist in the Buffalo area.
Yes. So the local emergency room referred me to Roswell Park. And I've been there a few times through the years because I'm volunteered there for like 25 years in the gift shop. So it's, been inside the building a few times and knew some things about the building. So they referred me to, Roswell Park. But in the meantime, my wife, colleague, her husband had cancer. I believe he had prostate cancer. So he was seeing an oncologist out here in the Amherst area, not too far where I lived. So he was affiliated with the Roswell complex, but in the North Towns Center. So yeah, I took her recommendation and went to saw this oncologist who was a hematologist and a general oncologist at the time, because I didn't really know anybody else. So I figured, and they had great care with him. So I took that path. But before I'm trying to think, in conjunction with seeing him, I obviously had to have a CT and a PET scan, and they had to go through the whole gamut of testing just to determine a little bit more about X-ray was showing. So unfortunately, it showed that I was stage 4 lung cancer. It had metastasized to my T10 vertebrae and a little bit of my lymph nodes. So yeah, it was categorized as stage 4 right off the bat. And but this oncologist, even though he's a little bit of an older fella and, not a thoracic specialist, he was educated and knowledgeable enough to know that there was testing out there. And for my situation, somebody who really maybe had very little risk factors, as far as secondhand smoke or environmental. So yeah, he suggested that we should do some testing and, some tissue testing. At the time, they didn't do any blood-based testing. Maybe that would change now if this was, 6 years later. But they did tissue testing, and I was lucky enough through a bronchoscopy that my local cancer center, Roswell Park, had a relationship with OmniSeq, right down the street from the cancer center. So they were partnering on a project with their biomarker and their next-generation sequence testing. So I ended up part of their study process. And yeah, I had the what I believe was called the advanced test at the time from OmniSeq. And I don't believe any other testing were ordered at the time, but that comprehensive test was ordered. And it determined right off the bat that I had the ALK positive fusion. And there was targeted inhibitors approved by the FDA. I think there was at least two options at the time.
Right. And you're exactly right. You had our earlier version, OmniSeq Advance, which is now OmniSeq Insight, our next generation sequencing test for patients with any solid tumor, including lung cancer. And this includes DNA, RNA sequencing, as well as immunotherapy biomarkers. And so you touched on your diagnosis, but walk me through what your oncologist said when he found that ALK fusion, that your tumor harbored that unique biomarker.
Yes. So I'm not quite sure and I sort of transitioned between the hematologist at the Northtown campus and the thoracic specialist who he knew, a colleague of his, in the downtown campus. So early on, I was like alternating my visits, but the thoracic specialist who I saw shortly after the test, I believe, the sequence was, he suggested I should see her. And she mentioned something about, her words were, let's just cut to the chase. There's an approved targeted inhibitor. It looks like you can have some positive outcomes. So that was sort of her initial words. And somewhere along the way, either my group, because I'm involved in another closed Facebook cancer group, I heard the term that this was sort of like the cancer lottery. So between her words but when she did say they have an approved pill for this, the FDA approved pill, I thought she was talking singular because I'm a type of person who doesn't like to take medication or even supplements. It was blessed to not really have to take any meds. So, but I found out that it was multiple pills, but luckily they were capsules and they're easy to swallow. So yeah, that was some of the early days. And
you've been on alectinib now for 6 years. I think that's an incredible survival and you're thriving. I think I would love to know how you think your life would have been different really without that testing. Can you imagine what that would be like?
Well, yeah, I can. I still have some of the paperwork when I first sat down with the surgeon who did the bronchoscopy because he was hoping I was stage 1 and that they could do immunotherapy. I think it was Keytruda at the time and, going that route. But now as I learned in retrospect, Keytruda would not have been effective on my mutation or fusion. So that really would have maybe had very limited or very little, no success at all. So yeah, this next generation sequencing testing really changed my total treatment path as far as the right treatment for the right person at the right time. So it was everything aligned beautifully there back in April of 2019, because your testing actually only took 6 days too, which I know from my initial diagnosis to my start of treatment, it was like 2 months, but luckily my cancer was pretty well, silent through this and wasn't causing any issues. So there wasn't any real urgency to start any other treatment. So, but I am very grateful for the customer service at OmniSeq who helped me educate me early on, and for the scientists and researchers who were able to turn around the test in 6 days, and the insurance approval. I'm grateful that that went through. And yeah, I started my journey on alectinib or Alexenza a little over 6 years ago, and I'm on the first line treatment, even in my first line treatment. So yeah, I'm really quite lucky and blessed.
Many years to come, I know about that. Walk me through kind of at what point you're taking alectinib, you're being monitored by your oncologists with repeat scans. When did you really want to take a more active role in your care? And by that, I mean all this work that you're doing with the ALK positive advocacy organization. I know that you're really involved with the Facebook group that you mentioned. Tell me when you became more of a coach to other patients facing a diagnosis like yours.
Yeah, so I'd say probably maybe like 3 or 4 months later in that summer, because I asked my oncologist if she knew of any support groups. At the time, Roswell had a support group, which was wonderful, about 6 members. So I attended those monthly sessions. So that was very educational and supportive. And then that was general lung cancer. And then there was also, she mentioned, for my fusion, that there was a support group. So I was able to sign up for that support group. And it's a closed Facebook group, but it has a wealth of medical information on there. And seeing different posts, because it was basically an all-volunteer organization that started in 2017. So this was in 2019. They were sort of in their infancy a little bit, and had some members that were trying to form an advisory committee and try to, raise funds and raise awareness and try to, hopefully find some sort of cure. So I realized that they were needing some accounting help, and I'm an accountant by trade. So I figured I could at least volunteer, sometime helping out the organization that way. So that's how I joined the organization in the summer of 2019. And I've been helping out ever since. And then also as far as the cancer coach, as I became more comfortable with my diagnosis and really didn't have any issues, so to speak, to deal with, I figured I can help others and pay my blessings forward. So I've been various cancer coaches, not only through Roswell, but some different lung cancer associations where they always look for mentors to help those newly diagnosed. So I think I probably started that maybe a year or two after, I believe. So I've been doing that for several years now, and that's extremely beneficial to, for myself and hopefully for the individual I'm talking to. But obviously we can't offer medical advice, but it's just wonderful to have a rapport with them and give them hope that here I am, somebody, X number of years ahead of them, that there's a lot of hope and research is always evolving.
I think that hope and seeing someone like yourself who's been through it and done so well and continues to just do so well and give back. Would you mind sharing with our listeners, what is some of the advice that you give someone who's facing a diagnosis, maybe similar to yours, about what to expect? And then what could they anticipate with biomarker testing?
Right. Yeah, I would say hopefully their cancer, can be contained quickly and they'll get back to living a full and active life, which I have been able to for all these 6 years so far. But yeah, I would say that obviously I didn't really know anything about testing. But if they're, hopefully their oncologist, whether they're in a small community setting, knows enough to order, next generation, biomarker testing, or even some of the other supplemental testings that go along with that, if you have some other different variations or issues with lung cancer. Yeah, because obviously it's a life-changing treatment when they can pinpoint exactly what your tissue is, what cancer cells are in there. And it's just, you just try to, hopefully manage the side effects as well. Try to stay as active as possible. And actually, I've improved some of my physical activity since I've had lung cancer, things that I would have never done prior to lung cancer, like walk-jog combination. I exercise, played recreational basketball. I'm still lucky to be able to do that, but other activities like, running a 5K and things like, or jogging, I should say. I don't necessarily run the full 5K, but, climbing stairs. And with the American Lung Association, they have the stair climb. So I'm just trying to stay in the best shape of my life. So I would just tell patients to try to stay active. And also from a mental standpoint too, just try to, if you can resume or continue your normal life with your job or your family, helping others in your community, I think that does wonders for yourself personally and sort of takes your mind off things. And then maybe at night when things are a little quieter, you can fire up the computer and do a little more research on cancer or go on a closed Facebook group, which I am affiliated with. So that would be some of the early advice I would give to new patients.
Well, honestly, I think that's advice all of us can live by, right? Staying active, helping others, learning more about, the world around us. So I'm taking all of that advice in as well. What's something that you wish patients, providers, doctors, policymakers understood more about biomarker-driven care and personalized oncology?
I wish they understood, how effective and accurate it can be. Especially now, here we are in 2025, and that I know it was from an insurance standpoint, it's challenging to, cover certain testing, maybe Medicare, I should say, is a little more lenient, but some of the commercial providers, it's maybe a little bit hit or miss, and it's a certain type of test that's offered. So they may approve like a basic test, not necessarily the comprehensive full panel testing. So I've been trying to, advocate and see if insurance companies will expand their coverage, because obviously this medication is extremely expensive, but alternate forms of a treatment would be expensive as well, and most likely wouldn't be as beneficial as all the targeted inhibitors that are on the market for the oncogene adenocarcinoma lung cancer.
I think that message is extremely important and something that we are working with payers every day to help them fully understand the evidence behind the value of comprehensive genomic profiling, and that patients may have a relatively rare biomarker that could otherwise be missed if a smaller panel or single gene test is used. So you're living proof of the science that exists in our practice now. Okay, this is a bit of a fluffier question, but what gives you hope today and looking back on how far you've come?
I would say just how research is evolving. I've seen, quite a few changes, not only in my group, but some different lung associations I'm involved in. They'll send you an email post that this treatment has been approved by the FDA with this type of inhibitor or this type of chemotherapy treatment. So and I know chemotherapy is evolving. It's not the chemotherapy that used to be, decades ago. So between improvements in chemotherapy, immunotherapy, and the targeted inhibitors, it's and it seems like it's a subset of cancer, even though it's probably the leading cause of deaths in lung cancer. There's a lot of interest. Young researchers are working on this and heading in this field. And, companies like OmniSeq and LabCorp are obviously advancing that mission. And I have a lot of hope here in 2025. So even though there's no known cure right now, and I'll probably never, at least as it stands now, I may not be in remission, even though technically I have no evidence of active disease. So it's a pretty high threshold that I've attained right now. I'm not at the highest level, no evidence of disease, because they can still see a little bit of a scar tissue, but there's no active cancer. So I have, obviously that can provide a lot of hope for individuals, including myself. And I'm hoping that the federal funding can sort of situate itself and, that researchers can still get the funds and grants that they need to move forward, and that maybe things will settle out or shift a little bit, that the funds will still be available to help research institutions, the pharmaceuticals, and all the individuals that are this wonderful team that's up. Working behind the scenes, sometimes working all hours of the night to try to cure lung cancer and other cancers as well.
You have that right. We're relentless. And I know I speak on behalf of our team that many of us will never rest until, you know, we have answers that patients like you and elsewhere deserve and can truly have a personalized approach for their cancer. We hope we never face that diagnosis. And yet, you know, it certainly keeps me up at night. Your story, Ken, is so inspiring. And, you know, I've had the opportunity to get to know you a little bit over the past few months. You're such a wealth of knowledge and you give me so much inspiration each time we talk. But is there anything else you'd like to share with our listening audience, maybe clinicians, researchers, other patients who may be joining us about your journey or any unsolicited advice?
Yes. I mean, this has opened up a whole world of opportunities for myself to not only get inside cancer centers and see the inner workings of it, but to meet some awesome medical doctors, nurses, and even the staff at the LabCorp and OmniSeq, all the behind-the-scene researchers. I've been blessed to get a couple of tours of the facility. So it's just a tremendous number of individuals that I would have never met in my life that I've had a chance to meet with them, either in person, correspond by email, or just to see you know, how they interact or what sort of a role they play in lung cancer. So it's, and as we roll into, you know, Lung Cancer Awareness Month in November, I just try to shine the spotlight on all the individuals that have, you know, taken care of me. So I try to talk it up as best I can, whether it be you know, OmniSeq, LabCorp, Roswell Park Cancer Institute, or just to make individuals aware that anyone with lung, and unfortunately anyone with lungs can get the diagnosis of lung cancer, whether it be stage one or advanced stage four. But there's a tremendous amount of hope out here in this world, in the U.S. Obviously, we're blessed being in a larger city, but hopefully even some of the smaller communities in the United States and even throughout the world to some of the less affluent countries, hopefully they're able to have treatment, maybe not quite at the level that the U.S. has, but hopefully they're at a level where they can take care of their patient population as well.
Well, you have an entire cheering section here at LabCorp, Ken. And I agree with you. The Buffalo Lab is such a special place. The people who work tirelessly behind the scenes, as you've already alluded to, are just, you know, second to none and responsible for keeping up with all the test results that are required. And, you know, patients are waiting for them, for their doctors to receive them and prescribe the right personalized treatment for them. So I want to thank you again for joining us and having this conversation with us. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us next time on LabCorp Perspectives Oncology.